Good morning, everyone. It is Wednesday, August 16th, 2017, and the Green Bay Packers were back on the practice field yesterday. It had been a while since we saw them, honestly. They played against the Eagles last Thursday night, and then Friday they were not on the field. Saturday they did not practice. Sunday they had a practice that was closed to the media. Monday they did not practice. And so, essentially, this was the first time that we saw them in 5 days, and in training camp, you don't usually have gaps like that. Mike McCarthy had a 1 hour and 56 minute practice, and it is the first of two practices this week open to the media. The second one will be today on Reinitschke Field, and the Packers will have one more closed session before heading to Washington on Friday for Saturday night's game. My name is Michael Cohen, and this is the Packers Podcast. I thank you very much for tuning in and listening. I know that I mentioned Tom Silverstein was probably going to be here today, but there were some scheduling issues, so he is going to join tomorrow's podcast instead. So for all of those Tom Silverstein fans that tuned in just for him, I'm sorry, you have to listen to me instead. As I mentioned the other day, this was going to be a loaded podcast. There were all kinds of things that happened at the facility yesterday. There was a press conference from Mike McCarthy. There was practice itself. There was a locker room session. And then all the defensive assistant coaches spoke to the media as well. So let's start with what Mike McCarthy mentioned right off the bat. And that was ruling out a few guys for this weekend's game. Don Barclay with the ankle injury will not play. Vince Beagle, the outside linebacker, will not practice this week and will not play against Washington. And then the two players with concussions, Demarius Randle and Malachi Dupree, both of them are still in the concussion protocol, and it is unlikely that they will be available this weekend. Other injury news that took place at practice today. Josh Jones, the rookie safety that had been making all kinds of good impressions, dropped out of practice with what looked like an ankle or a foot injury. He went to the sideline. He was on the ground for a while. It looked like the medical staff was dealing with some blood or cleaning off a scrape of some sort on his foot. Then they put on some bandages, and then they strapped him with a giant ice pack. He sat on one of the carts next to the field for about 20 minutes or so, and then they took him away into the stadium, into the training room, to go through with whatever else he needed in terms of treatment. We saw Josh Jones in the locker room yesterday briefly. There was nothing on his ankle in terms of a brace or a cast or even, you know, just an ace wrap. And he said that he was stepped on, and so it looked like he merely got cleated. And if that was the case, then certainly it was more precautionary than anything else, and a big sigh of relief for the Packers, because he had obviously been playing extremely well, and that's not a player that you want to lose, you know, at any time, but especially during the exhibition games where he can, you know, basically benefit from every rep that they can possibly give him. Two other players dropped out of practice yesterday. You had safety Jermaine Whitehead. I don't really know what happened with Whitehead. I just saw that toward the end of practice, he was walking down the sideline and he wasn't wearing his jersey and he wasn't wearing his pads anymore. He was actually carrying them. And so we put him down with all the other jerseys that, you know, the players dumped them into this bin, and so they can then be taken back up to Lambeau Field to do laundry, and Whitehead just stood on the sideline with some of his teammates for the rest of practice, so we'll have to find out what his issue is later today. Aaron Peck, the tight end, who is a converted wide receiver from Fresno State, he dropped out of practice as well, probably with about 20 minutes left. I didn't see anything in particular that happened to him. You know, it wasn't as if he was limping heavily or he was holding a wrist or an arm or anything like that. So we'll have to see what his situation is. But I saw him walk into the Don Hutson Center with one of the trainers toward the end of practice. Now, as we get later in training camp, one of the big questions is always, will quarterback Aaron Rodgers play? And if he's going to play, how much is he going to play? Well, it's sort of like a weekly thing where Rodgers is asked about that just about every time he speaks to the media, and today was no exception. So Rodgers was asked, will you play against Washington? And his answer was, I don't think I need to play against Washington, but if Mike McCarthy wants me to, I certainly will do so. And you got a little bit of a hint today that there's at least a chance that Rodgers will play against Washington, even though I think it's a small one. And that's because during team reps today, Rodgers actually was there and on the field, whereas last week, whenever the Packers went into the team reps, it was always Brett Hundley leading the offense as the first quarterback, then Joe Callahan, then Taysom Hill. Yesterday, however, Rodgers took the first rep of every team period. So he took one snap in period A, one snap in period B, and so on and so on, and you get the idea. The rest of the reps were split among the three players I mentioned, with, of course, Brett Hundley taking, you know, a large amount of reps since this is a huge training camp for him. So, do I think Rodgers plays this weekend in Washington? No, I don't think he's going to play. But Rodgers said what just about everybody expected, and that is he's almost certain he's going to play against the Broncos next week. The third exhibition game is traditionally when the starters get the most work that they're going to get in all of training camp, and that's for a couple of reasons. One is because it's close enough to the start of the regular season that they can benefit from taking reps in an actual game. And two, it's not the last exhibition game. You don't want to have your starters out there during the last exhibition game, because then if they get hurt, there's no time to recover. So the fourth and final game in every preseason is always 100% backups. You might not see any starters at all, or if you do see starters, they might be out there for one series at most. So I don't think Rodgers is going to play this week, but he's inching toward playing, in my opinion, based on what I've seen at practice. And as Rodgers himself said, he certainly expects to play when they go out to Denver next week. So that'll be something to keep an eye on there. There was a long snapper battle that began today. The Packers signed veteran Brett Goode over the weekend to come in and compete with rookie Derek Hart. And they were both on the field today. They both took turns snapping to punter Justin Vogel. And I'll give you a little bit of a rundown of what we had there. So Brett Goode was on the field for four snaps, but one of them was a fake punt. So we didn't obviously have any kicking numbers to measure in terms of distance or hang time or, you know, things like that. So when Goode actually snapped and Vogel actually kicked, there was an average of 46 yards per punt and a hang time of 4.14 seconds. The distance is very good. The hang time is okay. It's respectable. Then Derek Hart came in and took four snaps, and Vogel's averages with Hart were a little bit different. His average distance was less. It dropped from 46 to 41, but his hang time actually went up significantly from 4.14 to 4.68, and 4.68 is a tremendous hang time. Now, is any of that related to Brett Goode? I don't know. You'd have to ask Justin Vogel, and I didn't talk to him yesterday in the locker room, but I do think it's interesting to note that there was a pretty sizable difference in both categories from one guy to the other, and it wasn't as if all the snaps with Goode were amazing and all the snaps with Hart yielded terrible punts. It was one category really good with Hart, and one category really good with Brett Goode. So we'll have to see how that continues to play out over the next couple of days. I don't know if Vogel will punt today at practice. Sometimes they punt back-to-back days. Sometimes they don't. Mason Crosby did not kick at all in yesterday's practice, so I wouldn't be surprised if he gets his first chance with Brett Goode and Derek Hart splitting their reps later today. And that'll be another item that we definitely want to watch, because, you know, obviously the snap has caused some real problems so far in the field goal game with Mason Crosby. And if Goode comes in and snaps it really, really well, which has been the case throughout, you know, his entire career, you know, it seems as if he's more likely to win the job than Derek Hart. And if you ask me right now who's going to be their long snapper against Seattle in week one, I think the wise money is on Brett Goode, and that it just will not pan out for Derek Hart. But hey, you never know. There's 3 weeks and three games left to go, and a lot can change. When we talked to the assistant coaches today, one of the treats of talking to the defensive coaches is that cornerbacks coach Joe Witt Jr. is extremely detailed, extremely honest, and extremely blunt when it comes to his answers to questions that, you know, we ask him every other week in our media session. And, you know, the reason why that's unique is because there are a lot of guys that have no problem speaking to the media in terms of their level of comfort in front of a crowd or Their ability to give detailed answers. Some guys are cliche machines, but there are some on the staff that are pretty good. But, you know, Joe Witt is one of the rare guys that is very honest and not afraid to call out his own guys. I would say that he's pretty unique in that regard. And I'm trying to think of other guys on staff that'll do that. And maybe quarterbacks coach Alex Van Pelt is pretty honest about when Aaron Rodgers needs to change things or do things a little bit better. But other than that, you don't have too many guys that are blatantly honest when it comes to reviewing their own players. And Joe Witt is, like I said, a rare exception to that. So let's go back to when we talked to Joe Witt at the very beginning of training camp, or maybe it was even OTAs, I can't remember. But he's going through and he's naming guys left and right, saying that, you know, Devon House had a bad year in Jacksonville last year, so he needs to play better. Then you talk about Demarius Randall and Quentin Rollins. They didn't play well last year, and they need to play better. Josh Hawkins needs to play better. And so the only guy that he really credited as having a solid season was Ladarius Gunter. And the times that Gunter struggled, which of course, you know, there were some big moments in Dallas, in Atlanta, in the NFC Championship game, Witt took the blame himself and said that was more his issue of putting Gunter in spots that did not match up well with his particular skill set. He was putting him in difficult positions. And that was the reason for some of the poor play rather than anything Gunter was doing wrong. So the reason I mention all of this is because he was asked about a couple of the young guys today and how they've performed in camp so far. And I thought, once again, he was very blunt, very honest, and, you know, pretty detailed in his assessment of guys. So one of the players he was asked about was Josh Hawkins. And Hawkins is a guy that saw a little bit of action with the first team defense. We saw him in there with Kevin King on one side of the field on the perimeter, then it was Hawkins on the other side, and then it was Quentin Rollins in the slot. Now, there were certainly some injuries at that position that played into it. Remember, veteran Devon House is still out with a hamstring injury. He's day-to-day. And then cornerback Demarius Randall is dealing with a concussion, as I mentioned earlier. So, you could say that Hawkins' reps were due in part to injuries, which is absolutely the case, but Joe Witt said that they want to give him a chance this week to play against some of the better receivers, and I have a feeling that he's going to get a lot of playing time against Washington. And Joe Witt really has a sink or swim theory. He is very open about the fact that players can either do it or they can't, and he's going to put them in situations where he can find out if they can do it or if they can't. And so with Hawkins, with any of his corners really, it comes down to giving them opportunities to cover the best receivers. So in practice, that means Jordy Nelson, Devontae Adams, Randall Cobb, Geronimo Allison, all these guys at the top of the depth chart. And in games, it means taking reps earlier in the first and second quarter rather than later, because the opposition will have their best players in there. So keep an eye on Josh Hawkins this week if you're able to make it out to practice today or Saturday night when they play Washington, and see how he performs against what Joe Witt is trying to match him up against, and that's better competition. Then he talked a little bit about a young guy that I thought played pretty well, actually, against Philadelphia, and that is Lenzie Pipkins, an undrafted free agent from Oklahoma State. I thought Pipkins played really physical. I thought he played with a real edge to him, a lot of speed. I thought he was flying around, which is what you want from young guys. But Joe Witt, of course, with a much more trained eye than I will ever have, saw it a little bit differently. He echoed the fact that Pipkins played with a lot of aggression and a lot of energy, which is a good thing, but he said there was a lot of stuff that he needs to clean up. He called it an up-and-down performance, and that's the type of honesty that you don't really get with some of the other coaches on the staff. Not all of them, but some of them. And then the third player that he was asked about was Ladarius Gunter. So, as many of you know, Gunter was forced to go from fourth on the depth chart last year to first on the depth chart because there were injuries to Sam Shields, Quentin Rollins, Demarius Randall, and Demetri Goodson. It was basically, you know, an episode of MASH in the cornerback room. And so Gunter was put into this position where he is not capable of being a number one corner. He is not at that level to play in the National Football League, but he was asked to do it for essentially the entire second half of the season. And this year, coming into camp, he struggled right away. His first few days in camp were really poor. He's open and honest about that. He's talked about how he struggled. And since then, he improved a little bit, but then once again, he sort of had a few days where he was getting burned repeatedly on the outside. And then about a week ago, the staff made a change, and instead of playing him on the perimeter, they started playing him in the slot in their nickel defense. And this is a little unusual, because Gunter's body type at 6'1.5", and, you know, a solid 200 pounds, long arms, those are not necessarily the traits that you associate with good slot corners. And so when he plays in there, it's not that he can't play well, it's that he brings a different element to the position. He is not your small, Casey Hayward, agile, quick twitch kind of guy. He is more of your physical guy at the line of scrimmage that wants to play a lot of press coverage even though they're in the slot. And so Gunter, when he plays in there, is at a little bit of a disadvantage when it comes to foot speed and quickness, which is the same thing he faces on the outside because he's not a fast corner. He has below average speed. But he's able to play with more physicality within the first couple yards of the line of scrimmage. And that means jamming guys, it means bumping receivers, it means getting them off their routes, all these different things that can disrupt timing between a quarterback and a receiver and sort of doom the play before it begins if they're done effectively. So later this week, Gunter's going to play a lot of time in the slot, I think. He has basically not played at all on the perimeter recently, and they've been using him a ton in those nickel and dime positions. Part of that certainly has to do with the injury to Demaryius Randall, because Randall had been playing a lot of that star position, which is what they call the slot corner in the nickel formation. But with Randall out, obviously, they need to make adjustments, and Gunter was always going to get more playing time anyway, so that's certainly a part of this when you see him on the field a lot more. But another part of it is just, I think, that they've seen what he can do on the outside, and it's not necessarily effective. And so they need to try and find a way to use him or find out what he can do more effectively on a consistent basis. And so I think that's why they've used him in the slot. We got a chance to talk to defensive coordinator Dom Capers. And, of course, as I mentioned on the podcast the other day, there were some significant tackling issues against the Philadelphia Eagles, and that's putting it mildly. Capers said he charted his team with 16 missed tackles over the course of the game, and four of them took place on the first drive alone. Three of those came on one play, which was the long touchdown pass from Carson Wentz to Mac Hollins, in which Clay Matthews missed a sack, Kevin King was stiff-armed to the ground, and Quentin Rollins was stiff-armed to the ground. So, nothing really of note there in terms of what Capers said about those missed tackles, other than the number itself is extremely high and obviously something that the Packers want to cut down this weekend. We saw a decent amount of time dedicated to tackling today, but nothing out of the ordinary, and I expect it to be the case, you know, the remainder of the week in practice. So on Saturday, I'll be looking forward to watching their tackling and seeing, A, if there is improvement team-wide, but B, if any of the same guys have tackling issues, because then you can sort of start to build a little bit of a trend, and it's something to definitely note moving forward if the same guys or the same couple of guys are having tackling issues week to week. When we talked to safeties coach Darren Perry, he was asked about Marwin Evans, and Evans is a guy that is sort of the forgotten man in this safety room. You look at Morgan Burnett, HaHa Clinton Dix, Kentrell Bryce, Josh Jones, these are the guys that are getting all the publicity at that position, and Marwin Evans is the guy that was on the 53-man roster last year. He made it fair and square, just like everybody else, but he plays the smallest role of those guys. I thought that Marwin Evans played really well against Philadelphia. I thought he was physical. I thought he was fast to the ball. He obviously had a nice interception. And so Darren Perry was asked about his camp overall, and he had a really interesting way of phrasing it. He said that Marwin started pretty well and then took a big, significant dip, in which the low point was the family night practice inside Lambeau Field. And at that point, Perry said, fear becomes a very big motivator for these guys. And so after family night, Evans has turned it on and played better, and I thought he was one of the best defensive players out there against the Eagles. And that's a really interesting way of putting it for Darren Perry, because there's no doubt that Marwin Evans is a guy that, if he's not on the roster bubble, he's certainly in the bottom third of the roster. There's no argument there. But I don't think it was a guy that was necessarily in huge risk of losing his spot on the team. But nonetheless, that's the business that these guys live in. You can have 1 week of bad practice, and all of a sudden, fear becomes your primary motivator. Not necessarily just the desire to play better, but fear that you will be unemployed. So I thought that was a very candid explanation from Darren Perry about the way that these guys sometimes operate. And, you know, obviously that applied to Marwin Evans over the course of the last couple of weeks. The last topic I want to touch on, I know I'm sort of jumping around out of order here, but I want to go back to something that Joe Witt said. I think I mentioned on the podcast the other day that Mike McCarthy and his staff decided to submit video clips of the hit on Demarius Randle by Bryce Treggs, the wide receiver for the Eagles, and the hit on Malachi Dupree by safety Trey Sullivan, also of the Eagles. They submitted clips of those to the National Football League because the Packers thought that it was that both of them, rather, were hits that are outside, you know, the rules of the game. And Joe Witt was sort of asked to reflect on that same concept and what he thought of the situation. Is there anything that Randle could have done differently? You know, is it his job to have his head more on a swivel? Is he supposed to look at that guy before coming downhill? And the answer is no. Basically, Joe Witt said that Randle did everything correctly. But the reason I bring it up is because Witt had a really interesting quote just on the physicality of the game overall. And at a time when player safety is reaching a peak and certain players are retiring early and other players have said that, you know, they'll never let their kids play this game, I just thought that what he said was pretty interesting. So I want to read it to you really quickly, if I can pull it up here on my screen. Okay, so this was what he said. Basically, he was asked, is there anything that Demarius Randle should have or could have done differently to avoid being put in that situation? And that wasn't meant as a slight to Randle. It was asked out of curiosity in terms of what these guys have on their plate every snap when it comes to responsibilities. So here was Witt's answer. Quote, no, Demarius did everything he was supposed to do. Just thinking about that play, that's the type of play that we want to get out of this game, okay? We're looking to grow the game, and I want my son to play and make this game as safe as possible. That's the type of play that shouldn't be in this game, you know? Demarius did everything that he was supposed to do. We've been prepped. All the teams have been prepped on that play exactly. There was an example of it from the Miami game years ago. It shouldn't have happened. It's a shame that it did happen. And that's the type of play that we want to get out of this game so this game can grow and be the great game that it always has been and will continue to be down the road. End quote. So I thought that that was pretty interesting for a couple of reasons. One, because he reiterated that not only do the Packers think that it's an illegal hit, but it's one that teams around the league have been explicitly briefed on in terms of things that are absolute no-nos when it comes to player safety. Second, I thought it was pretty interesting that Witt was adamant that he wants his son to play this game, not just that he will allow his son to play this game, but that he wants him to. That's not necessarily because I know anything about Joe Witt's son, because I don't, but I just think it's interesting that he is so honest about that, because there are guys in the locker room that will tell you otherwise. And obviously everyone is welcome to their own opinion. I just thought it was interesting. And then the third thing is that he thinks that football will continue to be a great sport, you know, down the road. I don't think he's alone in that by any means. I think the majority of people inside Lambeau Field will tell you that football is going to be the most popular sport for the next 30, 40 years. It has definitely surpassed baseball as, you know, America's pastime, so to speak. I just wonder if that is true. Will football be viewed as a great game 20 or 30 years from now if all of the head injuries that we are currently discovering among players in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and beyond, if those injuries continue or spike or just are not able to be reduced at a significant rate? Is football still as cherished, as great, as revered by players, coaches, fans, casual viewers, whatever the case may be? Is that still going to be the case if all of these head issues are prevalent, persistent, and unable to be eliminated from the game? I don't know the answer to that question. But Joe Witt is certainly of the mind that it will be a popular sport and a great sport for years to come. And I don't doubt that. I don't know the answer to whether the head injuries will be reduced, but I feel pretty confident in saying that football is going to be a popular sport for a very long time. There is a certain sect of fans around the world that love the game for basically the violent element of it. That's what they like. They like the physical nature. They like the aggression. They like the contact. That is part of the sexiness and the appeal of football to some people. Other people like it for different reasons, to each his own. And so it'll be interesting to play out. I think if you asked guys around the locker room, you'd get a lot of different answers about where they think the game is going. Is the game safe? Should they be worried? Will you let your kids play? And the reason I think you're going to get a lot of different answers is because it's essentially a cross-section of society. If you went into your own offices and asked everybody the same questions, I'm sure you'd get a lot of different answers. And yes, these guys are in it 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, but that doesn't mean that they haven't thought about these things. And while I still think the majority of them would allow their kids to play football and would promote this game no matter what happens with it from a player safety standpoint, I do think you'd probably get some variants of answers. And if you went through the organization as a whole, you know, talking about front office guys, coaches, scouts, people on the business side of things, you know, people in the ad departments, people in the ticket offices, I think you'd get tons of different answers, even though all of them work for and are employed by the Green Bay Packers. So it's just a topic that's interesting to me because I think you can get all kinds of different answers from people that are essentially around the game constantly. And that, to me, is noteworthy. And so that's why I wanted to share it with you today. I know that this podcast probably felt a little bit disjointed today, but I kind of viewed it as like a bits and pieces edition where there was so many interesting things discussed today, so many noteworthy elements that I just kind of wanted to go boom, 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 rapid fire and get through them all. And so I hope it wasn't too hectic or too scattered for you to follow, and perhaps it was still enjoyable. As always, I thank you guys for sticking with me. We have daily podcasts during training camp every Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. So be sure to subscribe on iTunes or the podcast app on your iPhone. I think it's also in Audioboom and Stitcher, if those are programs that you use. And of course, there are links to the podcast on our websites, jsonline.com and packersnews.com. I know I said Tom Silverstein would be here today, and I failed to deliver on that promise, but he said that he would be here tomorrow, and I trust him. So, for those of you that love Tom Silverstein, be sure to tune in tomorrow. He'll be here, I'll be here, and I'll talk to you soon.